This is the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified with Eric Taylor, myself, Shiva Maharaj, our recurring guest, Brian Weiss, and we'd also like to welcome Robert Nelson of TechPlanet. I know we are going to discuss the hot steaming pile of shit that is Kaseya. Where would you boys like to get started?
We could pick up from right there.
Number one thing that I thought was kind of interesting was Kaseya has now given FireEye, I guess, to people for at least a limited period of time to work their way through this thing. But don't they have Rocket Cyber?
The Rocket Cyber acquisition came on the heels of the Perch acquisition by ConnectWise. And Rocket Cyber, based on all of the press releases, was supposed to be the savior of everything. I haven't heard anything about Rocket Cyber actually detecting or mitigating. Oh, wait, no, they don't mitigate because Rocket Cyber is nothing more than a log collector with absolutely zero intelligence.
So that'd be kind of like Sumo Logic, only they put it in a different form.
Well, Sumo Logic collects and you have to supply the intelligence, whereas Rocket Cyber is supposed to be a managed SOC / Kool-Aid, because we all know how much of a turd most of those guys are in the channel. For the most part, all but two of them have been quiet throughout this entire incident. But my question is why? Now, I love FireEye. I think Mandiant is a really good company, as is FireEye. Great tech. Why is Kaseya using them and not using the golden bastard child that is Rocket Cyber?
They own it. Seems like it would be a great way to show off their technology.
I think of two things. You know, you got one where you don't want to have everything from your internal systems, you know, being the front of it, I guess. But at the same time, you want than to be the front of it. You know, you purchased this freaking managed SOC that's supposed to be the savior, but yet you are going with a third party to do all of your analysis and, you know, logging, you know, just doing everything from, you know, Mandiant. So is Rocket Cyber really not up to snuff that they say it is?
Okay, I was sold Rocket Cyber is like to have another set of eyeballs. So when I'm out delivering pizzas, if something were to happen, I could get flagged and know about it. I tried to rely on it, but I never could get a good, clear answer of anything that was an issue. I got a lot of noise, but nothing of any importance that I ever found. I really liked the Office 365 part that they were trying to roll out, but I was having some weird issues with it. And of course, every time I submit a ticket, it's under development or we're still trying to work the bugs out, or you really need to go buy another license for this or another license for that. So then when they rolled over into the minimum, I just walked away. I said, you know, I'm not paying you one thing when you're working on it, you know, a really good price, what I thought was a really good value when you're working on it. I had the patience. But then when you want to charge me like you're real, then you need to be real. So I walked away from it. Plus, then Kaseya bought them out, and unlike some of you other guys, I'm not a fan of Kaseya.
So here's my answer, Shiva, to that question. Number one, how did they know Rocket Cyber wasn't infiltrated? They don't
separate.
Know that.
They it's, said it's well, completely separate, and VSA is not being used on that steaming pile of shit. I mean, sorry, SOC.
Yeah, I mean, they said that marketing-wise to try to keep people from freaking out, but until you know the depth of what actually happened, how do you know what type of lateral attacks did or didn't happen?
Are you telling me that they may not be that truthful with what they say in public?
100%. I mean, it's all PR. You know, you don't want people freaking out and jumping ship without knowing all the info. So you try to tell them things to calm them down until you do know the info. So, and then the other thing I would say is Rocket Cyber just isn't enterprise level threat hunting. Bottom line, their log aggregation, it's more compliance than it is security.
But is there any real threat hunting there other than a few canned commands or searches and queries that every other managed SOC might be using?
So they're going to put in, just like Huntress, and you know, I'm going to may potentially inadvertently bash Huntress a little bit here, but they are just parsing what they know. But in the setup and configuration, at least when we were all part of it, you know, you would put in your Alien Vault product key, you would put these other API keys in for your external threat feeds, and then it would parse all of those API keys and external threats against your stack to see what was there. So they didn't have it all internally built by any means.
But that's just using third-party threat intel, realistically. And, you know, going back to your comment about Huntress, I think Huntress demonstrated some extensibility of their agent and their capabilities by accident. I think they showed really how deep they or any company with system level access can get into an endpoint.
Yeah, that's really something that we were kind of hitting around the other day, but we never really talked about. So they said, they as in Huntress said that they were able to re-inject a legacy EXE, the agent EXE, and some legacy DLL files. But I never got a straight answer. Did they do that from their platform itself? Or yes. Did they give it to the MSP to put it back on their servers?
They did it preemptively for the MSP via their agent or their system level access.
Yeah, because their agent is supposed to only be a one directional thing, log collection and submittal.
Once your system, you can do whatever you want, right? It's on the company. Now, in this case, I don't think Huntress did anything wrong by swapping out those files for files that would do nothing but benefit the MSP. I'm waiting for the day that, and I hope it's soon, that Kyle drops the, hey, we're doing a managed SOC offering now. Robert, you use them. What's your experience been so far?
So far, it's been good. I mean, I don't use them extensively. I'm slowly rolling them back out to some of my what I consider my high value targets. But so far, it's been good. I've noticed things like, say, when Bitdefender does an update and some of those executables change, you see Huntress picks up on it. They flag it. They make sure they're the right thing. And then they clear them and whitelist them on through. And of course, once they're in their system is good, then they are everywhere is good. But I thought that was pretty interesting to watch some of those updates happen. But, it's a persistence checker. So if you're looking at, but here's the one thing I can't, that really bothers me about Kasaya is, and we've had this discussion individually, is this is the third time in 3 years they've been breached.
By Reval.
And they're reaching out to another company that was breached by somebody less than a year ago to help them, Rocket Cyber Replacement. It's a group of breached companies now are offering services. And at what point in time do you finally say, look, I can't trust you anymore?
Well, according to their CEO, only 50 MSPs were hit. And despite it being a life-changing event for those MSPs and their customers that got hit, according to the CEO, it's just being overblown. It's not the biggest incident in the history of ransomware.
And they're just small businesses. Right. So we don't care.
They don't count.
They don't count.
Well, if you look on social media, those people that are members of the 20 that use Kasaya are just, they said like it ain't no big deal. We quit providing services to our clients for a week. It's no big deal.
All these Kasaya users at the 20, which is a master MSP or loosely called or whatever.
Cult. Master
they
cult.
All have the same talking point. It's an off patch week. So we're not missing anything, which means the 20 has invested in spin and marketing and legal to give them their talking points. But let's consider something here. Just before VSA got popped, what vulnerability were we all dealing with?
Print nightmare.
And there was a patch put out by Microsoft.
Three patches now.
But there was one on Wednesday, despite it being a piece of shit and doesn't work, which is okay. That happens. At least there was a patch, which is more than I can say for VSA putting anything out. How were the 20 MSPs or the MSPs that are part of the 20 or any MSP using Kaseya going to roll that out? Because I know they didn't have Intune configured. I know that 90% of them are just serving pizza.
So the first major patch come out on Wednesday and the 20 couldn't roll it out. And then, of course, the updates have come out since then. They haven't been able to roll out because I don't think they're going to be live again until Sunday if everything works right.
Allegedly. Now,
allegedly, because the head of Kasaya's, they were going to be live like last Monday or Tuesday. They started going live, then all of a sudden they pulled the plug. Nobody knows why, other than we can guess they found another hole in the Swiss cheese that they had to go back and plug.
While you're on that topic, I don't know if you saw Fred Vakola's video from maybe Wednesday or perhaps it was Thursday morning, where he stated all of the vulnerabilities that were exploited have now been patched. So how many vulnerabilities were used on this thing? Is that why they took him out and they pinch hit with the CTO who said absolutely nothing of substance?
Yeah, because all he did was reiterate the other thing, what our CFO said. But I want to know, is that part of what was disclosed yesterday or the day before of the portal that was left vulnerable since 2005 that they just recently talked about?
Yeah, you're talking about the article that came out from Krebs?
Mm-hmm.
And so was that vulnerability exploited and is it now patched, or did they just choose to continue to not patch it because it's only been 16 years.
To the best, from what I gathered from that article, they disclosed it. It's never been patched. Was this part of the exploit? I don't know. You know, Hunter's put out a video not too long ago of kind of walking through of how to use a wraparound Mimikatz to exploit it, which is kind of creative. You know, from a pen testing standpoint, I was like, huh, never thought of that shit. So I'm actually scribbling down notes. I'm like, all right, I know how to freaking go after this now. But this is just... Even that is Huntress's best guess of what's happened, you know, how Reevil got there, right? So I still see on Twitter unofficial reports that more and more people are coming out saying they have submitted vulnerabilities to Kaseya that they have never patched in over 13 years.
Hey, Brian, you are a former Kaseya partner, despite not having any equity. How have their update cycle run on the platform in terms of vulnerabilities and potentially new features?
So, I haven't used their VSA product. It was on-prem when we were using it since 2018. I felt like it was very poor communication back then anyway, as far as, hey, we've got a vulnerability. You need to patch your on-prem server ASAP. And it falls in line with this, hey, we added a WAF rule to our SaaS platform for this vulnerability, but didn't bother to inform any partners they should do the same thing for their on-prem servers until we get this patched, right?
But would you really want to put that out there and affect your valuation pre-IPO? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, these are the types of concerns I have when, you know, companies like this go public, is what's going to happen with leadership and what direction are they going to be taking the company? They care more about
the moon
PR than, yeah, they care more about PR than they do their partner base at some point in time, right?
One thing I wanted to discuss, I don't know if you guys heard Fred Vakola speak about this, is Kaseya Cares from 2020, which was Kaseya's money grab at federal funds. And let me expand on that, because maybe that's not what it was, but I think it was just bullshit wrapped in altruism. They hired attorneys, accountants, and everyone else to help their partners get a piece of that CARES money pie. And I'm pretty sure it was for two things: to make sure the Kaseya bills kept getting paid by their partners, and to make sure those partners got through COVID to continue paying Kaseya's bills. This isn't Kaseya helping anyone. This is Kaseya helping themselves, but as I said, wrapping it in altruism.
Once a company goes public, yes, their priority does shift to the stockholder. I mean, it has to. That's just part of being a public company, does it not?
But the shareholder doesn't get the golden parachutes that C-level gets.
No, but they're looking for that value. They're looking for that stock growth and those dividends or whatever. That's why people invest in them. It's not, there becomes a focus on trying to raise that value. I mean, look at what SolarWinds is doing. Is they're spinning off their least profitable section off into something else so that they can get their stock value back up for everybody.
Well, I mean, when you're not private, you know, partners like us have more leverage when it comes to voting with our dollars, right? We don't like exactly a vendor. We don't use them. The minute they go public, our dollars have less leverage, because now it's all about public stock price, because private equity, who's still likely owns the majority of the company, even though it's public, now sees that public stock price as their driver for making more money versus
making money not on selling their services anymore. They're making money on trying to get that stock price up.
I want to ask a question here. We keep talking about using your money to vote by which vendor you buy. When you consider the MSP channel as a whole, do you think that's even a possibility with the sheer number of fanboys for any particular vendor? I mean, you say something marginally not nice, not even bad, about certain vendors, you will get an entire Slack room ready to hang you.
Yeah. It's just like when I had that same experience when I talked, threw a little shade at Huntress, because everybody was thinking that they're a managed SOC already. I'm like, no, they're not.
Huntress is like that. Pax8 is like that. Even Kaseya themselves and some of the other RMM tools.
Have you ever had an incident where a salesperson sent you something in email and when push came to shove, they said no, despite it being an email?
Twice.
Me too.
And one of them was the head of Pax8. who finally just said, well, we can't honor what he said. I mean, it was a pricing issue, and I was in the middle because I use, you know, straight up, I'm using Synchro for the most part now, and I was working on the integration. It looked like it was really good, and I get all my CSP stuff through Synex, who have been very, very good as far as easy to work with and everything. A little slow to respond with tickets, but overall, they've resolved
all the issues I've had. The VSA incident now. They're not answering shit this weekend.
So true. So the guy told me everything I needed to do to get my price, because they had mentioned a better price to me a while back. He said, here's everything you need to do to get a better price. I did it. He said, oh, no, I don't. It was like, what are you talking about? I said, well, here's your email, dude. No, I can't. No, I don't understand. I mean, it was just like a total, like I was talking to an alien or something. So I reached out to Patterson, I think is his name. We had a couple of conversations, didn't really get anywhere. I've got one thing left with PAX 8. I'm trying to figure out what to do with, and then I'll be through with them. But it's just not as great. Some people are getting some fantastic experiences with them, I guess, but it's not me.
I think vendors are starting to get to the point where you get the treatment based on how much effort you put into them in building their social media profile. If they know you're going to be their cheerleader, they will pave the road and roses for you to walk on.
They'll even buy CTOs from a company.
They need to pay me some attention then, because my MSP group is ranked number 43 as one of the most influential
MSP groups. Is that the trolling group or the real group? Because I know you have two.
That's that's the group I created to troll Ryan Christopher Smith.
Gotcha. So that list is bullshit. Okay. Got it.
So we rarely even posted there, but it's number 43.
With all seven members? Facebook groups.
It's got like 800 members in it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I reject as many as I only. It's a quality versus quantity thing. I reject a lot of people.
Are you guys coming across any MSPs that have been directly affected by this Kaseya incident? I see both Brian and Eric shaking their head here. For those of you listening, who wants to go first to tell us about what's going on there?
I mean, I guess I'll jump in. I mean, just kind of like what we talked about last episode, that, you know, some of these MSPs that we're talking to are scared. They don't know what to do. They don't know now that they're probably going to be having talks with Kaseya about how they're going to financially benefit them and make them whole again, as the CTO is pretty, or the CFO said. So I think I don't know if they are actually going to end up paying the ransomware for these affected companies, because Solutions Granted is in the mix doing a negotiation, which sucks. I really wanted to be part of that. That'd have been great. But anyway, I don't know if they're just paying it through those guys and trying to make some of these guys whole, or, you know, if they're saying, okay, well, you had to pay, you know, $20,000, whatever the amount is, we'll give you a credit on your bills, you know, equal to that plus whatever. I don't know.
Fred came right out and said that he's not going to pay any of the ransom Bitcoin because U.S.
America doesn't deal with terrorists. Yes.
Exactly.
In a stuttering John way.
Yeah.
But see, he did say he was going to put financial backing to make these MSPs whole again. So explain to me what the fuck that means.
Ooh, I know.
That's a PR statement.
I think what he's going to do, because there's so many affected, despite him saying it's just an overblown incident that, you know, the White House and intelligence agencies have to get involved in, they don't have better things to do. I think he is looking for MSPs to go negotiate their ransom and then come to Kaseya and say, hey, to get back on our feet, we need $100. And whether or not that $100 includes the $50 for the ransom, not that it's going to be 50, Kaseya is going to dole it out and have plausible deniability to say, we didn't pay any ransoms. We gave the MSPs what they asked to get back up and running.
And that's going to be given back to them in credits. There's no way they're going to give that back in cash, because what would prevent somebody, you give them the cash and then they cancel. You have no chance of ever recovering. So you're going to give it back to them in credits.
No, it can't be credits, because when you consider what the ransomware are for some of these companies, they don't have that kind of cash laying around. I think what it's going to be is there's going to be some kind of agreement that the MSP has to sign saying, if you take money from us for helping you for our fuck up, you can't sue us.
Mm-hmm. And you have to honor all contract terms.
Or extend your contract by 5 million years.
Well, it's got to make sense, because you still are, you know, it's got to make sense. If they were, in fact, in a pre-IPO stage or preparation, it's got to make sense because they've got to account for it moving forward through this. So they can continue on to that stage. And then their thoughts could be, if we got through it, we go IPO, we could raise enough money to help overcome whatever ended up happening.
What MSP in their right mind would stay with Kaseya if this event affected them? That's my first question.
There are many.
Probably all of them. They're all scared. I mean, you got to think about it. Let's go back into the flashbacks of your situation. You got hit with ransomware before. What if you were sitting on the pot now for a week, not knowing what the hell is going on? Your clients are up your ass because you can't do anything. You know, you're sitting there holding the bag in the middle. You're not getting any support from your possibly any support from your partner vendors. You're getting reamed out by your customers. You're probably losing customers right now. Like, that's some of the conversations we're having with some clients or prospects. They're like, look, I don't care what's going on. I need my business back up. I don't care what the hell Kaseya or the MSP is doing. I need my crap back up.
Well, so here's the thing. I mean, the two people that I know, one of them's in an MSP group, another one's in a partner advisory board. The one in the partner advisory board had 5,000 endpoints, and literally Saturday was moving to Datto RMM, basically saying, I'm done. I need an RMM now. And he's literally doing truck rolls where needed to get it installed, or hopefully GPO or Intune if he's got that set up.
Was he able to restore the computers? Or is this someone who has a down server, but not cryptoed?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. Down server, but not cryptoed. So I guess there's two different boats you could be in, right? Down server, whether you're SaaS or on-prem, again, why are you waiting around to use an RMM that may cause you more damage? Why not just jump ship to another one right now?
Well, at what point, how many days do you wait in which you finally just say, okay, y'all told me Monday or Tuesday, and now you've all of a sudden changed, you know, so you go and make promises to your clients that, hey, we're going to be fully back up again on Wednesday or Thursday. And then, okay, now you're telling me Sunday. What happens if Sunday comes and you say, well, we had another little glitch. It's going to be a couple more days. So I could see, especially somebody as large as that, depending on the client, that, yeah, you may even end up in a split situation.
I would have jumped on that Friday. As soon as I heard Kaseya got popped, I would be calling another vendor saying, take my money.
And there's two issues there, Robert, right? There's, did your client get popped? Are they actually down? Right. Yeah. Which, let's face it, I'm not going to wait for Kaseya RMM to come back up to address my client being down. So that's a moot point in my opinion. No, I'm not going to, you know what I mean? So I immediately need a different RMM and a different tool as I get them back up and running to take control over things again.
Yeah. Let's make this a learning experience here. Let's actually teach something for once in our lives, maybe. Kind of, sort of. You went through a ransomware event because of Kaseya's bullshit, Brian. How long did it take you to get onto a new RMM?
So luckily, we are already halfway through migrating to a new RMM, which is why only half our clients got hit. And we already had it installed, just not configured, ready to disable Kaseya. We immediately, after, you know, obviously we immediately disconnected the server from the internet, but we had to do some discovery on it. So after we pulled the SQL query logs, identifying what systems got touched, we downed that server and never booted it back up. In fact, I think I might have physically destroyed it like an office space scene. But yeah, I mean, we were lucky in that sense. In my opinion, RMM is one of the easier things to migrate to. Definitely a lot easier than, say, a PSA. It's just a matter of how do you get the agent on the machine?
I mean, let's unpack that. One of the biggest things that all vendors hope for is it's going to take you too much time or it's too complicated to move. I know that myself, Eric, and three or four other MSPs jump shipped from ConnectWise June, July of last year. And within three or four days, we were fully rolled out each on Datto RMM. There's no real issue in being able to migrate, I think.
No, there's not. And just like what Brian was saying, it's all about getting the agent. You know, you can get at least a baseline configuration put together on RMM and get that thing rolled out and, you know, then work on the configuration of the patching and other, you know, alerts and monitors and all that other garbage that you need to build out over the course of days, weeks, months, whatever, you know, your stack looks like. But it also talks a little bit that we have talked about before, the barrier of entry into the industry, right?
$50 for Datto.
Yeah, $50, a freaking credit card. And you have a number of agents that is as easy to install as Adobe Reader.
Even Adobe Reader is harder, man.
Ah, maybe. Trying to find the right version online, maybe.
Just use the crack version that everyone seems to want to install on their system.
Please don't do that.
That was a joke.
You need to make sure you got two agents on your system. Do your Datto, do your Kaseya or whatever, and then just go buy a single Synchro or a Terra account. Set up a policy that's nothing but information. Does it actually do anything? And then install that on everything so you have a second way into everything.
Okay, David Modab.
Yeah. Threat actors would love to see us do that.
Oh, my God.
Increase the surface area for attack. I mean, that makes perfect sense now.
So, I mean, with that said, I mean, I wouldn't say you would have to do two RMM agents. Definitely doing an RMM agent and doing some sort of remote session platform, whether it's, God forbid, Screen Connect or it's Splashtop or TeamViewer or something. So if your RMM goes down, you're not dependent on that RMM for your remote access. You are dependent on a third-party application to get you back in.
Let's go through that. If you're using Intune, you shouldn't need to do that because you can wrap an EXE or just load an MSI and boom, you're off to the races. Okay, fine. If you're on-prem, maybe you roll a truck or a GPO.
But most of those, you don't even need to do that. You just do the SOS or quick assist or whatever the variant is for that particular screen share and you're good to go.
What we do is we rely on Intune or GPO for workstation stuff if it comes down to that. On-prem servers is where I think that would make sense, where you're going to have maybe a pre-installed another way to connect remotely because especially if you're relying on GPO configuration, right? That's how we currently do it. And what we did recently is any on-prem servers we could easily roll a truck to and get to, we even ripped off the secondary access.
There's an easier way to do this. Most of the, I know all of us in here are using some type of EDR platform. You can launch a shell through all these EDR platforms now and just roll out a new program.
Yeah, and even do... take some of your monitoring you do in the RMM and move that over to EDR.
Here's a question for you. And Eric, this is something you and I have been considering. Scaling back the use of a SIM and a SOC on the endpoint because we're using a different vendor that has managed threat hunting. Then Brian, you and I, you're using a separate vendor who also does the same thing. So I guess maybe Robert and Brian, this is more to you guys. Do you think every client should have a managed threat response platform?
If yes. They're not building it out internally, yes.
Okay. How about you, Robert?
Yeah.
And is that something you guys are going to do or in the process of doing?
Going to try.
I just sent an email to my clients in response to this saying, hey, we weren't affected that we can tell, but we have no idea how serious this threat actually is. So we're rolling out our MDR service to everyone right now for the next 30 days at no cost and sending them quotes for what it's going to cost after the 30 days.
Are you going to do a typical vendor douchebag move and say, hey, if you don't cancel within 30 days, we're going to ding your card for it?
We're not auto charging clients, if that's what you're asking.
No, that's good.
Without their approval. But what that tells us then, so if they say they don't want it, the question is, okay, when? It's not here, sign this form that you're not getting it. It's all right. You need to tell us when you're going to pay for this then. And then if they say never, then that's a whole different discussion, right? It's like, all right, listen, we're going to have to look at either putting security in place sooner than later or finding you a new IT company.
Now, I'm happy you were talking about that because in our private Slack where we make fun of each other, you mentioned that insurance renewals are coming around for you and some of your clients, and it's becoming a stack of encyclopedias you have to go through. What are the new applications looking like for you and your clients? And I can only imagine because we are still, not us, but the industry is still in the Kaseya incident, some of those applications are going to be adjusted before finalized.
Yeah, I mean, the applications I've seen are a complete shit show because the questions they ask and the answers they allow you to give don't make sense. Here's one I saw the other day. Where do you have MFA configured? And it asks me router,
server, can I answer this?
Endpoint. And I'm thinking, yeah, go ahead.
You have to have MFA in front of an SQL injection.
Yes, that would have stopped it.
Because half of our industry thinks if you had MFA, any code injection, command injection would not have been able to get to Kaseya. Or as Robert likes to say, Kasaya.
I'm just going to sit here and beat my head over the keyboard.
Your questions are being written by people that don't understand IT because they're expecting certain answers and they haven't engaged anybody to say, this is how you do that. They don't know how you do it.
And see, and to cut off Brian, because I love doing that. A lot of these guys are, like I've said before, they're scared shitless. They're looking for anybody to give them an answer they can fucking believe at this moment. So whether it's, hey, if you had our service, we would have stopped it, a.k.a. Threat Hunter. Thanks.
Now you sound like Danny at Threat Locker.
Yeah, Threat Locker.
But they would. They are zero trust.
But not zero knowledge.
They're... Exactly. Zero trust, but not zero knowledge. So now if you want to shift over to that discussion, do you want zero trust and zero knowledge, or do you just want zero trust? I'm like you. I want zero trust and zero knowledge. I don't want you knowing nothing about my clients, period. I really don't even want you knowing their names. You know, I'm your customer. You sell me what I need.
For a true SOC, if you have a true SOC backing you, that it's not going to be a zero knowledge relationship.
But that's a different
type of relationship. Because they have to be able to. And,
I'm not talking about a SOC. I'm talking about something like Threat Locker.
Yeah.
When you start asking those questions, it's a whole dance around. Now, and that's the same thing I got in a discussion yesterday about how does the 20 do zero trust? Because my understanding is their Kasaya instance, it doesn't even make use of the multi-tenant solution that they have. So it's not possible for them to do zero. They can never implement it under that solution.
Yeah, because the way that their architecture is built, so you get a bunch of MSPs part of the 20, and you have in their head office, they have a bunch of network admins or whatever that are, you know, taking care of all of the members. So they got to be able to see all of those tenants at any given time and do what they got to do. And, you know, I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus by any means, but I've been told that if you are a member of the 20 and you start running scripts, you can start seeing scripts from other members of the 20.
You can use scripts from, it's a community. It's crowdsourced support.
Yeah, it's more like a community than individual MSPs.
That just makes me want to put some sort of ransomware payload, say, do not run me.
Well, that just means everyone's going to run it because everyone's too smart.
Oh, that would be funny.
So I do want to give a plug, though, to TechRug. They've been helping me cut through all the crap with insurance. And the underlying issue is that your insurance brokers that you deal with that hand you the forms to fill out, all they do is pass that information off to the carrier, who then has their own underwriting team that analyzes everything. And so you've got this separation in between you and the person that's actually classifying your risk. And so there's naturally a breakdown of communication there, especially when the questions they ask don't even make sense in some cases. Whereas a company like TechRug, who's specializing in this, they actually built out their own underwriting team in-house and have developed relationships with carriers where the carriers trust their scoring system. And the questions on their application actually make sense. You're like, oh, this is what I'm used to seeing. Like, you know.
Isn't that what John Murchison is doing over at Black Point as well?
He is, but from what I understand, he can't get me E&O insurance. And
I think he's just doing cyber. I don't think he's touching. Yeah.
And it's a big no-no to have E&O and cyber with two different carriers. You want them with the same carrier so they don't point the finger when it comes down to a claim.
But an insurance company would never do that. Why would they ever make you jump through hoops so they don't have to pay out on your claim? Come on.
Just get your cyber liability from Breach Secure now. They just ask you, do you want $25,000? Do you want $50,000? They don't ask you no questions.
$25,000 isn't going to pay for Eric's lunch while he's remediating your shit.
I know.
One last thing I'll share on the insurance front is the two carriers that are kind of ahead of the curve right now are Beazley and Lloyd's. So those are the two we're looking at. We're with CNA now that I'm trying to get off of.
CNA got popped in February, March.
Oh, yeah, they did. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, so. And they just released that they've got another data breach from after March. Part of it, but it's after the ransomware incident.
They announced that this morning.
Yep. So it's great, guys. It's just freaking great. I mean, you know, whatever.
So I want to do a little round robin here. I don't know what I'm talking about. Robin Robbins. But we can start with you, Robert, since it's your first time joining the Cabal. What are you doing differently now for your clients that you weren't doing, say, a year ago?
I think first of all, we're in an extreme rural area here, and trying to get people to understand the security issues out there has proven to be a big deal. So basically, we're still on an education campaign and trying to get people to upsell their posture, roll out more enhanced tools that would better protect them, and starting to do more to try to verify that things are working as they should, but probably not doing near as much as what I should be doing.
How about you, Brian? What are you doing today that maybe you weren't doing a year ago for your clients?
I mean, this recent event gave me a lot of time to kind of reflect and have flashbacks to what I went through 3 years ago. I'm at the point now where it's like, it feels bad to say this because I feel like I'm leaving a part of the small business community in the dust. But like, if a client doesn't care about security, I don't have the time of day, the time to give them the time of day. Is that how that saying goes?
I mean, why should you if they don't care about themselves, right?
It's just too much of a risk to take them on and then have to deal with, not only worrying about my own house, which I'm constantly revisiting, looking for gaps, but then have this client that I just know has gaps because they don't care about security. So I'm looking obviously in the co-managed space, dealing with IT departments that are struggling, that need help getting into the cloud and getting a better security posture because they talk our language and they care about security and they have a budget.
I hear there's a really good book out there on co-managed. Maybe you should check it out. I'm not going to say who it is. Maybe you should check it out because I know you guys see eye to eye on co-managed.
We see a little differently, co-managed with one IT person working in the client seems like a nightmare to me.
I try to absorb them. And by absorb, I mean, tell the client to fire their one person in-house and just hire us.
Yeah. Or if that person is really good, hire that person and do fully
managed. If they were that good, they wouldn't be looking to you.
Fair point. Co-managed, there's like four different models, right? The model I like the best is actually the VAR model, where I'm going in and I'm maybe just selling a tool to build that initial relationship.
Time and material, man. It works.
Yeah.
How about you, Eric? What are you doing for your clients today that you weren't doing a year ago? And for you, I think this takes two viewpoints, right? Incident response and then post-incident response, where maybe you're picking up some managed services or manage something or the other?
Yeah, I mean, so we're doing a little bit more these days of the MSSP model, I guess, where, post incident and we get people cleaned up, they want us to stay around naturally, which we're honored to do. We're putting together services and things of that nature to keep them going forward. The existing clients that we do have, we're actually doing what's called atomic red teaming. We will actually go through the MITRE ATT&CK framework. We'll pick a certain topic, email phishing. Let's say you got an email phish, and just like the ones that I talked to you about earlier this morning, where Microsoft Office has a vulnerability, well, I will call it a vulnerability, maybe it's just a configuration. The threat actors are able to bypass the notifications of our macro warnings. You can actually execute macros inside of a Office document and start doing what you want to do without being forced to enable stuff. So, going through those type of threat vectors, and this kind of goes back a little bit to Kaseya and some of the people that I'm beating up on Zoom calls and everything. It's like, okay, Kaseya got popped. Your workstation got a vulnerability or some sort of malicious payload. What is the next stop on your chain or what's the next place that you could stop that chain? Typically your EDR, typically your firewall, typically whatever, right? It's like, I'm going to take this big old freaking generation one, which I call lovingly the anal probe of Amazon, because that's kind of what it looks like almost. I'm going to go throw this thing through your window. Now, how are you going to stop me from further getting inside of your house? It's the same concept. So really doing that atomic red teaming, and CISA's put out their version of atomic red teaming now, which I'm starting to study and learn. I've actually got a class on that next week around that and breaching the cloud infrastructures and things of that nature. So,
but the cloud is secure. What are you talking about? You can't breach that.
Yeah. Just pop up an improperly configured freaking S3 bucket. The cloud
was born because you have IT practitioners who didn't know how to configure DNS. That's all it is.
Mm.
I did want to go into something you just said about what would be the next step to blocking after they got through Kaseya or any RMM. What do you think? Because we've seen many antivirus platforms say they stopped it or they could have stopped it. We've seen the threat lockers of the world saying they would have stopped it. But as far as I can tell, no one stopped it short of Kaseya, who put a WAF in front of their SaaS platform.
So the WAF is the point of vulnerability. You know, you're breaching the web app. That's that stopgap. The other stopgap is certain permissions and configurations in the Kaseya web app itself, you know, not being able to manipulate the K upload and the DLL files and being able to inject and remotely execute code would have been another stop. That's another poor coding problem. But once you're able to do that and get in and then start deploying everything that you're doing, you know, there's several layers that could have stopped this before the K agent or agent EXE that's on all the devices running system would have ever got compromised. You know, you're there. You've already hurdled yourself over five fences. Now, what's the next fence or trench that you have? And it really is your EDR. It really is those next levels of, you know, maybe auto elevate might have been able to do it, you know, running a change.
I want to talk about Huntress, because in the incident, while things were potentially still going down, they were swapping out that setup that ksetup.exe.
So I got a funny quick story on that. The guy that had the 5,000 endpoints whose server was shut down and that didn't get affected, all of a sudden freaked out. Why? Because he got a notification that Huntress deployed this file and he thought it was the threat actors when really it was Huntress. So he had a heart attack for a second until he figured out, oh, this was Huntress trying to protect me.
So he got that notification from where?
EDR.
What's his EDR, yeah, if you're able to say?
I didn't ask him that. I will have to ask him that though.
Because I have heard that there are reports that are unconfirmed that Bitdefender's EDR did stop it on some networks. Yeah. Now, I'm not sure if that's early in the chain or toward the late of the chain as things were getting developed.
Was that after IOCs were made public?
I don't know. That's the same thing I'm talking about. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, but I agree 100% with Eric. It's really EDR actionable SOC that's going to stop this, because there's no way to know how to build the mousetrap ahead of time.
Pop quiz, right? What are the top three socks you guys would choose? Go for it, Brian.
Oh, I'm in the Blackpoint camp, Blackpoint Cyber.
Okay, Eric.
Oh, I mean, we're a little bit of a hybrid. So, I mean, we're doing our own. So, we're using Sumo Logic and we're using CrowdStrike. You know, I'm building it out.
How about you, Robert?
I'm still trying to decide.
Go to Blackpoint. I like what John's doing over there. The only thing is you're going to need an AV engine, and you could probably just use your current vendor and get rid of the EDR portion, because that's what you're getting with the Blackpoint side as well.
Yeah, I would highly recommend Blackpoint. If you can't do it yourself, do Blackpoint and do Dark Cubed for your firewall.
I love that platform.
Yeah, you know, if you got an EDR or if you got a managed SOC SIM that's, you know, doing your endpoint, and you got one that's doing your firewall, you're doing pretty damn good. So definitely, now, if you can build it out, that's what I've been recommending. You go to those two guys. The cost isn't that bad. You know, most MSPs should be able to absorb most of those costs.
Most good MSPs.
Yeah.
Well, and to tell you the truth, I mean, really, the client should be the one paying for it, not the MSP.
No, the MSP should. You know where I'm about to go, because I beat up Matt Lee on this. The MSP is providing or buying a service from the MSP. It's the MSP's fucking job to make sure that they have the proper security stack. Don't be like, oh, well, if you don't want to do this X, Y, and Z, that's part of my stack. Okay, but we'll still service you. No, no. It's kind of like what you said, Brian. Either you are on board, yeah, or get the hell out of my way. Shit or get off the pot.
Well, I think if you're going to take that viewpoint, you have to have two sides of your business. You have to be a VAR and you have to be a managed services provider.
No.
And to me,
I'm a consultant. That's all I am.
Well, to me, I think a managed services provider is a company that has a package that you get sold and you have to absorb all the parts of that package. You don't want it, you don't want everything, and you don't want to pay it, then yes, I'm a consultant, I'm a VAR, I'll sell you what you want. You want me to do anything? It's T&M and that's it. But my SLA for my managed services is a lot better than my SLA for TNM, quite honestly.
But does that, because you still run an MSP, still having the VAR side of stuff, does that not still put you at risk?
No, I don't believe I have risk on either side, because I am not sharing risk with clients, and I make it incredibly clear they are responsible for their data. The risk is all theirs. I'm just there to help. My plan or subscription that I sell them is meant to help mitigate the downside. Ultimately, it's their risk. I'm not one of these MSPs that comes out and says, we're just like your internal IT, where it's like having us, but we're in a different, I'm not doing that bullshit.
Yeah, I think the average MSP, generally speaking, is going to have more ensued liability or risk with a fully managed client versus a VAR relationship. Because the fully managed tend to think, you know, in God we trust, you know, in iTech we trust, in Barricade Cyber we trust, that you're just going to have their back. And so if you're not having the conversations with them, identifying where their security gaps are, they're just assuming they don't have any.
I have a question for you, Brian. How many MSPs, how many IT providers, no matter what they want to call themselves, can even understand risk, much less identify it, whether it's for themselves or their clients?
I mean, I feel like, I think back to my days, you know, before I got into security, it was all about grow, grow, grow. I cared more about getting more clients and more income than I did evaluating risk that came along with that. So it took an emotional event for me to look at things differently. And I would imagine that's the same for a lot of MSPs out there. They haven't really.
How long is that arc? For you, it took a catastrophic event that, let's be honest, you're probably just overblowing it if you were to ask the Kaseya CEO.
I want to put this over to Robert, if you don't mind. Is, you know, Robert's knee deep in this thing, you know, especially with his rural area. You know, so Robert, you know, as an MSP, you know, you do some VAR stuff, you do some MSP stuff, but except for education, what would you say is some of the biggest pushbacks about getting businesses, especially in your area or anywhere
it's
around you?
It's money, man. They just don't, they're not going to spend it.
How are you overcoming that hurdle though? For
sometimes them? I keep a very vibrant break fix business going. That way I've always got something to do.
And I think that's the way to go.
When they don't choose your managed program, which is, let's say, for lack of better words, it's your all-encompassing platform for them. You just service them as a break fix. And for those of you listening, break fix is just another term for time and material.
Put some tools on there, sell them block time, and say, here's my recommendations. What do you want to do? It's basically, hey, do you want us to add this? Gonna cost you this much a month. Do you want to add that? I mean, I don't have any. I give proposals out for all encompassing, but I don't have any that would just let me do what I want to do. I've got a couple that are starting to get that way. They're starting to realize it's like, my God, there's so much to this stuff, and we're not doing half of what we need to be doing. And you know, they're starting to realize it costs money. It's almost like having another employee.
I've got an interesting outlook that I thought about over the weekend too, as I was thinking about quitting my job, and it had to do with doing residential services. I'm like, I don't really enjoy working on computers anymore and fixing them, but if that's what you enjoy doing, there's almost like less risk in just doing residential.
I think there's less risk doing residential. They're just more of a pain.
Yeah. I mean, you got to deal with more personalities, right? You got to be a people person, I guess, but you know, in all fairness, it's like, so what? You can't access your Facebook or your photos. You got ransomed. That's not my problem. I mean, it's a kind of a sad way to look at it. But I mean, when it comes down to it, if you like fixing computers and you don't want to have the stress of getting hit with some big ransomware event across all your clients overnight, do residential.
Have any of you guys seen this article here? It's about a town in Maryland that got shut down because of the Kaseya VSA hit.
Now, I heard about the grocery store, but I have not seen this one.
And that's in the Washington Post.
This is in the Washington Post, and I can share the link in the description of the video and the podcast later for you guys. And Robert, I can share this in our Slack where we all congregate, but an MSP was hit and a town is down. How many towns across the country do you think this has happened to? I get that we're just, you know, perpetuating an overblown situation.
2 years ago, our sheriff's office was hit. They were down for 4 days.
But this is only small, you know, small 50 MSPs. There's nothing to see here.
Exactly. move along.
You're talking about 60 customers. Yes, a few days ago it was 50. So that number keeps going up, surprisingly. I mean, how is that even possible? Isn't Kaseya giving us exactly what we need, truthfully?
According to ReEvil, they've got over 1 million endpoints.
Now, the reason I bring this up is municipalities love dealing in CJIS because they have to access federal systems.
Here we go, Brian.
What the fuck?
So are you talking about the fact that Kaseya isn't FedRAMP and CJIS?
No, that was last week's. That was last week's. Okay.
All right.
Soapbox for me to get up on.
But that's what I brought up in the conversation that me and Brian were on with some other folks yesterday. And me and some other folks were going rounds and rounds like a donkey show.
No, what I'm talking about is part of CJIS and part of any business, and a municipality is a business, is having an incident response plan. And if you read through this article, they're dead in the water.
Yeah.
It is hard to get anybody to understand exactly what they need to be doing and what they need to be planning for.
I've come up and I've talked about this a couple of times. This is the best way that I've done it. You walk into their freaking network and like, all right, I'm going to pull this cord out of the wall. I'm bringing all this stuff down. Now what?
Well, let's take it one step further. When you're dealing with CJIS, you're getting federal funds to get in line with CJIS requirements. What was that money spent on if it didn't give you an incident response plan?
Bad in someone's pocket, I'm sure.
Well, I know that's the answer, but I wanted to stretch it out a little longer.
Wait a second. are you saying that government misappropriates funds?
I didn't say that.
Okay, well, just go like in my area, CARES money flowed freely through the federal government down, you know, for the pandemic. And they were supposed to be working on responses and stuff like that. What did they do? They upgraded hardware. They bought a bunch of Zoom, you know, set up Zoom and a whole bunch of meetings. They're talking about now they're not going to use Zoom anymore. And somebody said, well, what are y'all going to do with all those cameras, special cameras you bought and everything like that? I said, I don't know. We'll try to figure something out here one day. Yeah, and that was just 6-7 months ago that they did all that. So they have no federal money's like Christmas presents to them. It's just free money. It's not in the budget. They go around, hey, what do you think you'd like to make your job easier? Or what toy do you want? So it's a joke, really.
I want to get a little political in here because I think we have a nice cross section of viewpoints. And whoever wants to abstain, we won't let you. I read an article yesterday that some politicians and some advisors are telling President Biden he needs to give Putin an ultimatum to get involved and start dismantling the ransomware groups in Russia, or they need to make cryptocurrency illegal so these guys can't get paid. Now, is it me or is that absolute bullshit that'll just, you know, keep the federal hog spinning and spending when all they really need to do is put something in place that forces companies to secure themselves?
They need to put a standard in place. Here's the minimum. Here's what you got to have. And
they've got the safe harbor laws that they're rolling out in some states, right? Where if you can prove that you meet certain criteria, there's no civil.
Just like with HIPAA, if you can prove that laptop was encrypted, then we won't fine you for losing it.
But HIPAA is such a steaming pile of shit. I think HIPAA is worse for what it was intended than Kaseya is for what it was intended.
But it's that it gives you that safe harbor, and that's what you're looking for.
I don't want a safe harbor. I want to have a system where, or a standard where people actually have to do something and not just putting MFA in front of a code execution vulnerability.
Well, here's where that comes in at. Okay. If you put the rules in to create a safe harbor, then the insurance companies are going to say they'll fall into those rules too, because it helps protect what they have to pay.
Well, the insurance companies are the one that are going to drive all this. So
exactly.
If they can take it to a point where you're not allowed to pay a ransom, it's great for them. It reduces their exposure exponentially.
The double-edged sword that I see with going the route you're talking about, Shiva, and that's essentially what they're doing with CMMC, right? Is you start having people create regulations who probably aren't the right people to be doing it in the first place. Maybe they're breaking laws somehow and there's some news article that comes out about them.
Are you talking about the C3PAO that is under investigation by the DOJ for money laundering, and one of the people already pled guilty to getting no-show jobs? Because I don't know what you're talking about there.
I was touching on that. But if you think about, you know, America, one of the great things is being able to start a small business and make something for yourselves. Well, if out of the gate, your costs are so high to meet certain requirements. You know what I mean? How it's going to be harder to afford to be a small business, or all the small businesses that are in the government supply chain get squeezed out because they can't afford that now, right?
All right, so, bro, let me ask you a question.
Hey, Shiv, I'm gonna have to drop off this call because I got another call coming up.
Okay, no problem. Thanks for coming on, Robert. And for those who want to get in touch with Robert, it's techplanetnow.com, and his name is Robert Nelson, and he loves using Kaseya.
I'm not the Kaseya Messiah like Mr. Taylor is yet.
take care, Robert. Thanks for joining.
Thanks again, Robert. Right. Brian, what side of 40 are you on? Because I don't want you to give out too much detail. Older, younger?
Younger.
Oh, you're a baby. Okay. You, Eric, I know which side you're on, so I'm going to have to ask you this question.
Wait, which side of 40? I'm 42, so that puts me...
So much for OSINT. That puts you older. I thought you said younger.
Well, I understand now what you were asking.
Okay. So we're all over 40. Do you remember a time when to open a business, you needed a real plan and money to do so? And you just didn't have to pay $264 to the IRS to get an EIN?
No, even when I was younger, that's all you needed. You know, the mindset was always there to actually get a... Well, so... You could self-fund yourself like I've done my business and all every business I've ever had. It's self-funded. You don't need a business plan. You don't need all that crap. You know, you just need a roadmap. Say, hey, this is where I'm going. Here's all the steps I need to take to get there.
But that's granted, a plan.
Yeah, but it's just not elegant. It's not typed out.
You don't need you don't need a business plan per se, like if you're going to a major bank to get funding. My point is you need to know where you're going, right? You need to have a direction. You also need to have a way to either fund it yourself or get funding or, you know, couch surf till you make it like Mark Cuban did. It's not like nowadays where everyone and their mother can open a company and just let it languish and whatever. Like owning a company in the 80s meant something as compared to now. Everyone and their mother owns a company because they think they can write shit off. That's a whole different podcast, by the way. My point about having a standard is, let's say MFA is mandatory. Let's say you have to have a logging service. Let's say you have to have a next-gen AV or whatever they want to call that Kool-Aid bullshit, which is just an antivirus product. Like, that's what I'm talking about, Brian. Let's have some minimum baseline practices that we have to follow. If we're going to sell a service to a company and manage it, let's have an incident response plan if something goes sideways.
Yeah.
Right? That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about getting level one with CMMC or whatever, where it's $150,000 to $300,000 that you're paying some 3PAO to jerk you off, for lack of better words. And when it comes to CMMC, I firmly believe, and I've said this many times, it should be for the DOD, by the DOD. Charge $150,000, charge $300,000 to go through the audit. If you pass, you get the money back. If you don't pass, they keep the money. And that's your penalty for being full of shit and saying you were ready.
Yeah, I like that
approach. Or at least allow one revision or one revisit to the thing. So in case you mess something, but
you know, there's a difference between messing something up, making an honest mistake, and saying, "Hey, I have all my control squared away," and you got one loose leaf paper saying, "I accept this risk 100 something times." I mean, come on.
Yeah, because we don't know anybody in compliance is doing that at all.
That would never happen.
But I mean, you touched on something. I mean, it's incident response related, but really around business continuity. Because let's throw Kaseya out. Let's just say,
please no let's throw Kaseya out.
No matter what the threat is, if something happens and you can't operate anymore, like this grocery store chain that didn't have any POS machines anymore. It's not a question of how does a threat happen? How do we protect it? It's okay. Like Eric said, I'm walking into your business. I'm going to tell you right now, all your POS machines just went down. What's your business continuity plan to continue business? How are you going to continue business? Right.
You know who the winner is going to be in this entire situation? Microsoft.
Because maybe
many companies, many enterprise companies run on 365 to some degree. Some may use G Suite for their email, but they're still using the Azure AD identity. And I know that the road that's being explored by myself and many other MSPs is to have Intune do everything. And you keep, you know, instead of having X thousand number of RMM agents, you keep 300, 400, 500 as an emergency case, and that's it. they're not deployed. You just have them. You need to onboard, offboard, do something like a major project. You use them and you pull them off. And I see Microsoft really winning with Endpoint Manager.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, they're going to bring enough items that the RMM currently handles for us. I mean, major thing they have a gap with right now is network devices, right? How do you manage and keep a list of all your network devices in one place if they're not already cloud managed? So, but it's getting there. And then the other thing I'm thinking about is, okay, let's take all the pieces of an RMM and say, okay, if these pieces are going to eventually go over to Intune, what's left? I mean, maybe some sophisticated monitoring and alerting, but can we move that to EDR, you know, especially if it's security related? I would 100% agree with that, that they're going to be, I feel like they're already winning, to tell you the truth. Teams is the future, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of it is going to go back to, you know, a little bit what we talked about before, you know, having an EDR on your endpoint and an EDR on your network infrastructure. So a shameless plug, but not sponsored by Darkcubed. But you know how,
if you want to sponsor us, Darkcubed, you can.
Oh, would love that. But
we
anyway,
take Bitcoin.
My wallet address is. But you know, they're already taking your firewall logs and parsing all that traffic. It probably is not going to be much harder for them to start spinning up and pulling syslogs of your network gear. You know, so you have your backbone infrastructure, if you will, going through an external auditing log like Darkcubed, and you've got your endpoint monitoring and logging going through Blackpoint. Then that may help get you rounded out, you know, and then you have Microsoft for your entire identity stack, and that may help round out the entire picture, you know, with your AV, EDR, or whatever. So, I don't know. It's an interesting discussion to try to figure out, but I think that they'll be in the position to do it soon.
That brings something to mind. In the last year, I think I've reduced the number of vendors I have and deploy to my clients. I have tried to simplify it as best as I can with overlap, like the onion, because I know that Eric loves that analogy. But I don't see the point anymore to having 2-3 dozen vendors on a single client, because to me, that's just 2 or 3 dozen access vectors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I really love if Blackpoint could really get to a point where they don't need an agent. They can pull API from our RMM tool.
The problem you're going to have there is if the RMM tools have a myopic view of the market. They don't want to help build other vendors, even though it'll give them more extensibility.
Yeah.
Because then what's to stop the Blackpoints or any one of these guys? They have a system agent on there, right? What's stopping them from doing the same thing that an RMM can do?
Not much.
And I would rather take a network tap from Blackpoint and pair it with Intune than any other combination out there right now in terms of network protection without me having to build it from the ground up.
If your SOC doesn't have some sort of agent it can use, how is it really going to stop threats? It's going to have to depend on a third-party tool, right?
Well, take a look at a SOAR platform. A SOAR platform is just going to use API access to your endpoint to do whatever they need to do because it's running a system. So with Sentinel One, CrowdStrike, all the big guys out there, they can handle the remediation for you.
Okay.
Which is what, in essence, Blackpoint is doing, right? They're not doing the AV, but they're doing the EDR, and they're actually doing real threat hunting. I'm not sitting here wondering if they are real.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I just question if the SOC is going to be hindered if they don't have their own EDR tool that they can use and even modify over time as the threats landscape changes and they realize they want their tool to have some new feature or be able to look at data differently. That was one of the selling points for Blackpoint with me, is they brought up the fact that, yeah, we use our own EDR tool that we've developed and continue to develop to ensure we can have the shortest amount of time, you know, to stop a threat versus relying on a third party EDR tool where they're at the mercy of the roadmap and development of the vendor for that tool. And so they're limited in you know, flexibility there.
Let's take Perch Security and let's take Blackpoint and put them up against each other. Both are managed SOCs, but I think, would you say Blackpoint's a managed SOC or is it an MDR, MTR?
Aren't those the same thing?
Yeah. Oh, Eric, can I say it?
Go ahead.
Triggered.
I don't know what to believe anymore with, you know, because apparently Rocket Cyber's
a hot steaming pile of shit. Right. Rocket Cyber is really good Kool-Aid, and it does a really good job of collecting useless information. Well, collecting all your information, keeping it in a nice shiny place that you pay a lot of money for nothing.
Well, see, me, Brian's going to go down this rabbit hole, I'm sure, because, you know, me and him had many, many discussions in other forums, and he was like, Rocket Cyber is a sock. And I'm like, no, the fuck they're not. He's like, yeah, it is. And I'm like, no, it's not. I'm like, look at this. Start asking these questions. He's like, oh, crap, it's not.
So here's my take on what a SOC is. A SOC is parsing the logs in a SIM and generating alert for you. At the very basic understanding for me, at least. I think a managed threat response or managed detection and response is a SOC that generates those alerts and then escalates it to a team or moves it over to an analyst or someone who can take action to mitigate said alert. And I think that's what a Black Point is. I think that's what Huntress is or is going to be. I can't see Huntress staying as a persistence only type of platform. The guys that are too smart, too talented just to do that. Yeah. I think they're seeding the market really well the way they are, but I don't see that as their end all deal.
So my definition really as a SOC is a little bit more. So my idea of Huntress and of Rocket Cyber is a syslog aggregator. I don't think of them anymore. They've given you a pretty GUI. They're, you know, taking a whole bunch of queries and putting it out there. A real SOC is a software that you can create and manipulate your own queries in to generate more information that you want. So a SOC is something that you would be able to build out your own MTR, MDR, whatever managed threat and detection and response platform. SOC is when you get into having a sumo logic, you get into having an Elk stack or whatever, and you're building that out. You have database access to the queries. That's really where SOC, I believe.
I don't disagree there. I do think you're right. I think mine was just an overly simplistic view of it in that a SOC is not built to really react in the managed SOC area of the MSP world.
It's to alert you because you're right. Going to be the initial person.
Because you're tip of the spear, right? All these MSPs using a managed SOC have 35 people at their beck and call in-house waiting to do shit, even though they're one-man shops. But anyway, that's a different story. Now, you take a look at Perch. There is a log shipper from the Elk stack that you can put on. It'll do some FIM, file integrity monitoring, but I don't think they're built for any type of response. And based on what my pricing was when I was there and what the pricing over at Black Point is more advantageous, I would say.
Yeah, so Black Point's a little bit cheaper, isn't it? And you're getting a little bit better results out of Black Point than you ever were with.
More cost effective. And you know what we can do, Eric? We can go old school. You can bang on the door and see if they figure it out this time.
Well, dude, let me rephrase that.
Not this time. Not this time, because we've never done it with Black Point. We did it with Perch, and our listeners have heard us mention this all the time. I'm game.
Hell yeah.
Or let's switch it up. Brian, let Eric bang on one of your clients' doors.
The MDR, MTR SOC has been so overmarketed and underdelivered. I just call it, you've got a SOC or an actionable SOC. And how do you know the difference? Like Eric did, like you guys did with Perch, throw something at them. See if they catch it.
Is it in your practice? Not for you, because I think as IT providers, it's more do as we say, not as we do kind of thing. But are you restricting USB access on all your clients by default and then they ask you to turn it on? Or is it the other way?
All new clients on our new baseline, it's set up that way. But
and you're using Sophos?
I'm not sure. I'll have to check that. I don't set those policies. We did have internally set to BitLocker all USB devices, but I had to turn that off because I got too many complaints about that.
Okay.
I said, why don't you use Data Workplace? Why do you have to use a thumb drive? Oh, we need access to stuff offline in computers that aren't going to have our BitLocker encryption key.
There are certain people in the channel that call themselves the dictator. Well, with my clients, I'm the dictator, and I have banned USB devices and drives. Well, not devices, but drives. We are probably a month away from getting to a point where all USB's devices need to be approved and allow listed, because that's the new terminology, for our platforms. We're not allowing, even webcams need to be allow listed. And we're not. Wow. We're not even allowing off-branded and off-labeled webcams.
Nice.
Because I don't know what the hell those things are calling home to. Wuhan. I don't think anybody does. True. Highway. They're taking the highway to highway. But anyway, so you were talking about your actionable sock versus a non-actionable sock.
That's really just how I look at it now.
That's not a bad way to look at it, quite honestly.
It's the MTR, MDR, 24/7 sock. Like, they've all been over-marketed and under-delivered on. So it's hard to, you got to take things with a grain of salt.
This is true.
Lime, tequila.
And you got to test it like Eric wants to do with Black Point Cyber now. I mean, really, that's how you know. Right.
Well, I think we should do that. I think, you know, it's a moral imperative.
And it goes back to what I said earlier. This is the atomic red teaming that I put my clients through. You know, we put a stack in, or we spin up a trial of stuff and we put it through its paces.
Well, and it's no different than putting a backup system in. You don't put a backup system in and just assume it works until the day you need to use it.
More people do that.
What are you talking about, Willis?
Yeah, you want to like actually see it working so that you know it's going to work when you actually do need it.
People do that.
And let me actually put this as a shameless plug, because I mean, we all use Datto. So again, you know, plug, but not sponsored. But on the cyber call, or one of the calls that Ryan Weeks, the CISO of Datto, was on, I didn't even know Datto did this. And I'm a partner. You guys may, but if you're a Datto partner and you're using their backup solution, did you know you could spin up a mock simulation of every last one of your recoveries and at one time for all your clients, and just do that and say, okay, this week I want to restore all of my clients and let's see how crap this looks, or what this looks like, if it's crap or not. And I didn't know you could simulate that from those guys. That's pretty cool. I wonder how many other vendors are really doing that. So, I mean, huge shout out to Datto for doing it. And I'd love to know if there's other ones doing it.
I think Datto is just leaps and bounds ahead in terms of business and security process as a vendor in our space. And I don't compliment vendors easily or usually, but I think they're doing a good job.
I just found out about that about 4 months ago, dealing with a co-managed client that we put in a huge device for with a bunch of servers. And what we're doing is we're actually developing out business continuity playbooks based on which servers are having which issues, in detailing ahead of time what, you know, if, you know, here's plan A, right? If XYZ happens, what does the network need to look at? Like, what servers need to automatically come up in the cloud? And then you can define all that ahead of time, give it to Datto, so that when one of those events happens, you just tell them execute plan A. And then they do it all on the back end scripted without having to jump through the GUI if you were going to do it yourself. And so that's along the lines of kind of what Eric's talking about, is how they have the ability to automate these tests of, hey, I want to get my failover environment up and running and see that it works ahead of time. The other thing that's crazy about them that I know other vendors aren't doing is they don't charge you for the virtual resources that you use on the failover environment. So if you're out in Azure land and doing Azure backups and you need to spin up a failover environment in Azure, you got to pay for all of those resources as you're on that failover environment. Whereas Datto,
egress, degress, all that. Yeah.
Yep.
Again, I hate giving vendors that altruistic easy out. Datto has exabytes of capacity for this data center they built, I think, after they moved off of AWS. And whether they want to admit it or not, they are losing BCDR business, because not as many businesses need the Cirrus line anymore with cloud, with SaaS workflows and OneDrives, this, that, what have you. So they have the extra capacity. What I am happy about is that they seem to be leveraging it and making it available to us as partners and our customers at no added cost. I get that it's a sunken cost and they probably depreciated it from the financial side, but I know Kasaya, as Robert would say, since he's not here, or ConnectWise, they would tag you with a price for that. I don't think they would be as nice about it. So maybe they get one star for altruism.
Anything else anybody wants to talk about today before we wrap this thing up?
Eric just wants to wrap this up so we can go put on the Traeger and start smoking some meats.
I do have to figure that out for my next meal.
You got to plan ahead when you're smoking for 6 hours.
Yeah, that's... I got a big smoke coming up this weekend because my wife and kids are coming back up.
Is there anything else you guys want to talk about before we close this one out?
Nah, I'm good.
No, I say let's see what happens with these deadlines that Kaseya has given.
Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified. Please check us out. Like, share, subscribe, download, listen, learn, ask questions,
comment.
And I will also be linking the YouTube channel that's run by Eric over at Barricade Cyber for this. So you get in touch with Eric. It is barricadecyber.com. Brian is itech-solutions.com. I am continuum.com with a K. If you guys have time for this, did you see that Synnex was attacked to try to get access into the Microsoft tenants that they sell and administer?
I did.
Keep it in mind. Maybe we should talk about that on the next go round.
Sounds good.
Yep. Thank you for your time. We will see you guys shortly.
Take care, everybody.